Hello and welcome to the University of California Press podcast. I'm your host, Chris Gondek, and today I'm going to be speaking with Leslie C. Bell about her new book, Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. Leslie Bell is a sociologist and psychotherapist who specializes in women's development and sexuality. She maintains a private practice in Berkeley, California. Leslie Bell, thanks for taking time to speak with the University of California Press podcast today.
It's my pleasure to be here.
The subtitle of your book, Hard to Get, is 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. Could you describe the nature of this paradox?
Sure. So today's 20-something women have more freedom than their grandmothers could have imagined. Educational freedom, professional freedom, and personal freedom. But while this has all engendered a great deal of opportunity, it hasn't necessarily resulted in women having good sex and satisfying relationships in their 20s. So educationally and professionally, this group of women is quite successful in comparison with their grandmothers and mothers. They're disproportionately represented among college and graduate students. They have access to every profession, and they have the freedom to choose whom to have sex with, whom and when to marry, whether and when to have children. So they seem like a group of people who are primed to succeed, both professionally and personally. And they now have this period of their 20s when many remain unmarried and childless. So the average age at first marriage is now 27. So this seems like this great opportunity for them to be agents of their own desires and to get exactly what they want. But somewhat paradoxically, while their educational and professional freedoms have come with a lot of training and support, you know, there are countless institutions and nonprofits that are focused on facilitating women's access to education, athletics, and professions, their personal freedoms have been granted to them basically with not very much training and support. So many have been largely left alone to navigate this new territory of their 20s in terms of sex and love. Their mothers, their foremothers, are more likely to have married early and had different experiences, so they can't really serve as role models to them. And there's not a lot of honest conversation between young women who are sort of in their 20s right now and women who have come before them. So while some of the women I interviewed did manage to succeed in getting what they want, in the areas of sex and love, about half of them didn't. They were left with a lot of freedom, but with little help in navigating those freedoms.
You know, that makes me wonder that when the feminist movement really started to get moving in the 70s, whether this issue of having a good sex life was even part of the discussion. Or was the early feminist movement so focused on educational and professional opportunities, which is why today there's support in those areas, but not in women's sex lives?
That's a really interesting question, actually. So there's been a lot of focus on kind of, legal freedoms and access to power in kind of educational and professional institutions, but not, I think you're right. There hasn't been as much of an emphasis on, you know, sort of increase in pleasure generally. The focus, at least, of the political movement has been much more on kind of formal access, and those things have happened. The sexual revolution was, happening concurrently, and people have debated about the degree to which that's been helpful to women, what do I want to say about that? Certainly lots has changed in terms of people thinking that women are entitled to sexual pleasure and sexual freedom. But I think you're right that the women's movement itself has, at least in those early iterations, was not as focused on it as it was on formal freedoms.
Now, there's been some controversy surrounding this book, as its claims come from a series of interviews with 20 women, all from your practice in the Bay Area. How would you answer those people who wonder if this paradox you're talking about is only confined to women of a certain educational or social background?
Mm-hmm. Well, first to clarify, so they're actually not women in my practice. These are women that I did interviews with. So I'm both a psychotherapist and a sociologist, so I maintain a private practice, but none of the data in the book is from my practice. I wanted to really maintain the confidentiality of my practice. And so these are people who agreed and consented to be interviewed for precisely this reason for this book. So just as a point of clarification. But in terms of that question, you know, as in all qualitative research, I sacrificed breadth for depth in doing in-depth interviews with a smaller number of people than I could survey in a large sample survey. And research like mine really takes off where survey data ends, right? So we know, for example, from survey and census data that women's age at first marriage has increased dramatically in the last 60 years. It's gone from 21 to 27. So my research looks at what those extra 6 years mean for young women, how they experience them, what they're doing with all that extra time before the commitments and demands of marriage and children begin. And we also know from survey data about the degree to which at least college-aged women are engaged in casual sex, which is actually less than you might think given the media frenzy about it, about kind of hookup culture and all of this. It's really an average of 3 instances throughout their college careers, according to the Online College Social Life Survey. But again, survey data doesn't tell us anything about how young women feel about and make sense of the sex they're having. So in terms of, you know, research of this kind and what I can say, I'm picking up general themes, but I'm obviously not able to make broad claims about all women. In terms of this being a small subset of women, I really was deliberate in limiting it to college-educated women who don't have children precisely because they're among the most likely to have benefited from all of these educational, professional, and personal freedoms that women have gained over the last 50 years. And while the women I spoke with lived currently, you know, at the time of the interviews in Northern California, which I know is a much more socially and sexually progressive area than many in the country, again, these would seem to be the women most likely to have benefited from these new freedoms. So I'm also not talking specifically then about women who have more limited opportunities. Although this is sort of an interesting aside, there's a very interesting new statistic out there about age at first marriage among women who are not college graduates. And for the first time, that is higher, slightly higher than the age at first marriage for women who are college graduates. So there is this period of, you know, not being married. It means very different things, obviously, for women of more limited opportunities. In terms of the sample also, I actually deliberately oversampled women of color and queer women. Because I've been frustrated with qualitative studies of female sexuality that tend to focus primarily on white and straight women. So I do actually have more diversity in my sample than many of these surveys that I've read in the past. And I was curious about how women of color and queer women experienced and navigated these new freedoms, both similarly to straight white women and different from them.
It seems that the women in this book who did not have a fulfilling romantic or sexual life tended to split these two, thinking they could really only have one or the other. Could you talk about this split that you noticed with these women?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the arguments I make in the book that is that one of the kind of defensive processes that I saw happening among many of these women was something called splitting, which is a phenomenon that psychologists use to think about, you know, what their patients are doing to kind of navigate their lives. And it's usually something that people do in response to anxiety and uncertainty. So when presented with kind of a lot of different options and not a lot of clarity about what to do with them, we may have a tendency, rather than to kind of tolerate all of that uncertainty and complexity, to split things into, okay, well, if I'm going to be, a professional woman, that means that I can't be focused on having a relationship, because those things seem to, you know, it feels too complicated to me to try to navigate having them both. So rather than sort of sit with that uncertainty and complexity and try to figure out how to navigate it, I'm going to decide to split those two things in my mind and say, well, I can only have one or the other. And as you suggest, sometimes the split would be between sex and love. Sometimes the split would be between having a relationship or having a career. But that these were ways of kind of organizing experience that many of the women I spoke with used, rather than, you know, kind of tolerating and sitting with how complicated things were. But I have a lot of empathy for them because it, you know, one of the arguments I make is that it's precisely because of the sort of overwhelm of freedom and possibility and the lack of role models and training that women are sort of left to try to navigate this by themselves, and splitting is often the option that they kind of use.
I came away from this book thinking that these women are not well served by the message they get that their 20s are a time to sow wild oats, but by the time they hit 30, they need to be in a relationship, as if that's how it works out in real life, that the right person just shows up at a certain point in your life. It just seems as if they're given a false construct of how this happens.
Right, absolutely. Yes, there's this definite deadline that existed in the minds of many of the women I spoke with, that by 30 you'd better be married, 35 you'd better have children. But again, yeah, as you suggest, there's this period of the 20s where there's not clarity about, okay, so then if you're going to move to that, how does one lead one's life personally, and what do you do in terms of romance and sex and love in your 20s if you're going to get there? You don't automatically jump from, right, sort of having casual hookups and not investing in relationships to a marriage, right, which is sort of about interdependency and vulnerability and commitment. And if you haven't been practicing any of that, you're definitely ill-prepared, particularly if those are the kind of time limits that one has set in one's mind about when that should happen.
Several of the women in your book talk about the need to focus on their career in their 20s, and it got me wondering if the horrible job market of the last 5 years for both sexes is going to have an effect on this paradox, since it's going to be even harder just to start a career, let alone advance in one. Do you think there will be an effect on these women?
Absolutely. I think that the difficulties in the job market could have a variety of effects. It could, in one scenario, they'll only magnify this paradox, I think, for 20-something women, in that it will mean even more profound uncertainty in their 20s, less to hold on to, less certainty, less security, an even greater financial imperative to delay marriage and children, and a continued need to pursue graduate education to land a job, and an even greater pressure then to be self-reliant. There's sort of a more hopeful scenario I can imagine where these difficulties in the job market could have the effect of pushing young women and men to recognize their need to rely on others in a more productive way and to sort of move away from this kind of radical self-reliance. This is a very hopeful scenario, I know, but politically it could also encourage young people to get more involved in the political process and to advocate for more social protection so they're not left so alone as radical individuals navigating their own way sort of on their own.
So for a young woman listening to this, is there a single piece of advice you can give them that won't necessarily solve their relationship and sexual issues but could at least put them on a path to think differently about it?
That's a great question. I would say to really seek out mentors and people in their lives who speak honestly with them about kind of personal and professional success and how they've managed that, not in a glib or pat way. I feel like so much of the advice that young women get is glib and pat and is, doesn't kind of acknowledge the complexity of desire, of striving, of how complicated it is to sort of be both personally and professionally successful. In the last year or so, there was an article in The Atlantic about having it all, and there was a lot of controversy that happened because of that. There's Sheryl Sandberg has a new book. She's the COO at Facebook. About how women need to, seize control of their professional lives. And I think these are attempts at starting to have these conversations, but to really seek out people, not just, sort of information or people in the media, but people who are going to speak with them honestly and give them some clear, I guess clear is maybe the wrong word, but, give them a sense of how they've managed it and the complications that are in it.
Leslie Bell, the author of Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom, thanks so much for talking to the University of California Press podcast today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
For more information about this and other titles, please visit our website at www.ucpress.edu. Don't forget the UC Press is on Facebook, www.facebook.com/UCPress. And you can also follow us on Twitter, where we are at UC Press. Thanks for listening to this episode of the University of California Press podcast. Copyright 2013, the University of California Press, all rights reserved.